Well, I suppose most men never really grow out of this. I really haven't for the most part. But all boys, starting at about age 9 or 10, get obsessed with fire. Am I right? And I've been on enough youth trips with enough middle school boys to tell you that fire is scary. Fire is hot. Fire is dangerous. And fire is fun. I got over this obsession with fire really because of two events. When I was in college, I pledged at Christian universities, we call them social clubs, is a fraternity, a Christian fraternity at my school. And one of the things that we had to do as we pledged is we had to take care of our special pledge brother, Feist. Now, Feist was named Feist because in Lubbock, Texas, where I went to college, there was an area-wide Yellow Pages phone book called the Feist Area-Wide Directory. And Feist, our pledge brother, was a dummy with clothes stuffed with about 30 Feist phone books. So he weighed, at least 150 pounds probably. This guy, this pledge brother Feist, we had to take him everywhere we went all week. He was our pledge brother. So we had to take him to class. We had to carry him to chapel. And at the end of the week, as we got dropped off in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the country at night, and told, walk 13 miles in that direction, and you'll know where you're going when you get there. And don't forget Pledge Brother Feist. So we picked him up. We carried him. It took all of us to carry him. He was that heavy. And about 8 miles into our long walk, a truck pulls up and some of the club brothers jump out, including the club president. And he said, stop right there. We have some bad news. Not all of you are going to make it into a club tonight. In fact, one of you is not going to survive the night. And we were just sleep deprived enough to wonder who they were talking about. And then we realized they're going to let us get rid of Pledge Brother Feist. And the president handed us a bottle of lighter fluid and some matches and got in the truck and they drove away. And we thought, this is great. Not only do we get to get rid of Pledge Brother Feist, but we get to burn something. So we had a ceremony for Feist and we covered him in lighter fluid and we lit him on fire. Someone, somewhere in this whole plan, did not take into account that we were in the middle of West Texas cotton-growing country, and that West Texas is windy all the time. And so we burned Pledge Brother Feist, and he burned all up, and the fire went out, and we kept walking. And we got about 2 miles down the road, and we happened to look back, and one of the guys said, is it dawn? Is that the sun coming up on the horizon? And we checked our watches. No, it's 2 a.m. in the morning. And then it all occurred to us at the same time. And without a word, we all start sprinting back to the fire that we had just started in someone's cotton field in West Texas. The fire department was called. The club president was talked to. Ended up being okay. But I'll never forget that day. And it almost cured me of my pyromania. The second thing was the village that we used to live in New Mexico, a mountain village named Ruidoso, New Mexico. It was a beautiful ski village. We lived there for 3 years, and I did youth ministry there. And the year after that, after we moved away, there was a forest fire. It was just a small spark and a windy day, and it ended up being a total disaster. Destroyed many homes and many, many acres of forest land. Here's a picture of it, if you can see that. Some of you may be keeping up with the Fort McMurray fire in Alberta, Canada, that's still burning. So far, it's burned over 600,000 acres of land. 88,000 people have been displaced from their homes, and 2,500 structures have been lost. All it takes is a small spark. James says in James 3, consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire. A world of evil among the parts of the body, it corrupts the whole body and sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. In other words, when it comes to what we say and to how we handle our anger, we're playing with fire. And so when Jesus is preaching his most important sermon and inviting us to become more fully human, to embrace the deep inner goodness that goes all the way to the bottom of our heart, he knows that if we're to become fully human through God's power, then we're going to have to deal with the way that we talk, the way that we speak about each other, the way that we think about each other, and about our anger. And so if you'll turn with me to Matthew chapter 5, we're going to look at this part of the sermon as Jesus preaches this truth that is intended to help us become fully alive. He says in verse 21 of Matthew chapter 5, "You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, 'You should not murder.' And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment." Okay, pause. Everybody doing okay so far? Have I stepped on your toes yet? Everybody's okay? I don't think there's a lot of murderers in the room. If there are, you can remain anonymous. We're probably all doing all right with that command, right? Don't murder. But it continues, "But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will also be subject to judgment." Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, "Raca," is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, "You fool," will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar and first go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Let's unpack that a little bit. There's that word right there in the middle, raca. Jesus says, hey, if you say raca to a brother or sister, you might end up in court. And you may have heard some before about this word, but it's a word that means vain or empty. It's derived from a root word meaning to spit. It's a word of contempt toward an object or a person that is despised, raca. We might say, you idiot. You stupid moron. And Jesus says, if you say that, that threatens to destroy community, and you might just find yourself in court. What about this word fool? Thanks to Mr. T, it's hard to take this word seriously sometimes, right? But in Jesus' culture, it was the greatest verbal insult that you could throw at another person. It was meant to cut straight to the core of their being, to damage and wound them in the heart. A fool was somebody who despised God's wisdom and instruction. This goes beyond making a silly mistake or just being a little accident prone. Saying "you fool" was meant to cut at the dignity of the other person. It was dehumanizing. It was the term of ultimate dismissal. If we were to translate it into our common language, we might say, "you're a worthless." And Jesus says, to think of someone in that way and to speak to someone in that way puts you in danger of the fire of hell. Now, that's the third thing I want to unpack, this term hell, because contrary to what most of us hear when we hear the word hell, Jesus isn't using the word that's typically used for hell in the New Testament here. He's using the word, the Greek word, Gehenna. Okay, now I know that, okay, we're going to get into the Greek. We're not going to really talk about that. But the word Gehenna isn't some later judgmental place with fire and caves. It's actually referring to a very literal place. So when Jesus says, you're in danger of the fires of hell, you're in danger of the fires of Gehenna, he was talking about a place, and they would have all known what this place was. There was a place in Jerusalem called Gehenna. It's a translation of the words for the valley of the son of Hinnom, the valley of Hinnom, Gehenna. It was south of the main part of the city of Jerusalem, and it was the town trash heap. This is the landfill. People would take garbage there, they would take broken things there, sometimes they would even take bodies there. And in Gehenna, there was always a fire burning, the trash. And so it was always this smoldering pile of burning garbage. And as is the case in most garbage dumps, there would be wild dogs who would be fighting over scraps of food and gnashing their teeth at each other. The Valley of Hinnom, Gehenna, was considered cursed because of things that had been done there in generations past. Generations earlier, the people of Judah had turned away from God and had started worshiping other gods. One of the gods they worshiped was a god named Molech. And how you worshiped the god Molech is you sacrificed what was most important to you to the fire. So some of God's people, including some of the kings of Judah themselves, burned their children in sacrifice to Molech. Nobody would want to build a house in a place like that. They have lost their grip on their own humanity to the point where they had dehumanized their own children to the point that they became objects of sacrifice to a false god. So when Jesus says, you better be careful about how you think about the people around you and how you speak to them, because if you speak to them in a way that cuts to the core and dignity of who they are as a person made in the image of God, you might just find yourself in danger of the fire of Gehenna. I don't think that this is some threat for some future reality somewhere else. I think Jesus is saying that when we degrade others by how we speak to them, by how we label them, when we cut people down and devalue others by letting our anger at them smolder, Jesus says we're in danger of becoming just like the kinds of people who burned their children to death. How we handle our anger, how we handle and control what we say to others, it matters to God. And it matters to Jesus because he knows that the road from anger to hate to murder is so much shorter than any of us ever would have imagined. In fact, Jesus says it's so important. He says it's more important than worship. Did you pick up on that last part of the verse? He says, if you're going to worship, going to give your offering to the Lord, and you remember that someone in your life has something against you, someone that you haven't been reconciled to, stop what you're doing and go and be reconciled to that person and then come back and offer your gift. Now, Jesus is in the area of Galilee when he's saying this. So he's saying this to people who were several days' journey away from Jerusalem, the place that you would go and make sacrifices. So it's a little absurd, but he's saying it matters that much to God. If you walk 3 or 4 days' journey down to Jerusalem and you go to the temple and you spend money and you buy a flawless sacrificial lamb and you're about to take it to the altar in worship to God and you remember that your neighbor has something against you, stop what you're doing. Leave the animal there, walk home 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days and be reconciled to your brother or sister. And then come back and offer your worship. Jesus says that there's almost nothing more important to God than how we treat each other. And he says that the way that we love each other, the way that we are reconciled when we've had difficult times with each other, that matters to God more than we ever could have imagined. Several years ago, I was doing youth ministry in Abilene while I was working on my degree, and I was on staff for part of the time at a church, and then some circumstances changed, and they had to cut the position that I was in, the part-time position I was in, and so I continued to volunteer and loved it. But there were some events that led me to believe that I wasn't being effective, and I was discouraged. I felt like I wasn't making an impact, like I didn't matter. And then one of the older ministers on staff took me to get coffee, and he sat down with me, and he said, Mark, as you know, there's a youth ministry position opening up here at our church, and I know you've been discouraged by the way that things happen, but I want you to know that my son is your biggest fan. And you're really, really good at this. God's gifted you to do this. And so I can't predict what the search committee will do or what they'll decide, and I don't have any say over that, but I hope that you'll apply for the job, because I believe in you, and I know you would do a great job. I can't tell you how much those words meant to me in that season of my life. I did apply for the job, and I didn't get the job. But that's not the point. The point is that years later, those words still give me life. Because words have the power to do that. They have the power to destroy life and the power to give life. Have you ever had a moment when you were in a difficult season? Maybe you were at the point where you wanted to give up, you were discouraged, you were hurting, and maybe someone came into your life and at that exact moment said exactly what you needed to hear. Maybe they said words that gave you life. Words like, I believe in you. You can do this. I forgive you. Please forgive me. I'm proud of you. I'm with you. You're not alone. You matter. I love you. In the beginning, when God made all that was made, he spoke. And through his word, worlds came into being. Words have the power to create new realities. And we desperately need a new reality around here, don't we? Because the world has literally gone crazy, right? It has gone crazy. And all of us are filled with rage and hate and anger and fear. And a smoldering, burning hell is raging all around us and in our own hearts too. That's why Jesus is inviting us to be changed. To be the kinds of people who overcome fear and anger and hate with life and love and peace. Can you imagine a world where people use their words to build up and create rather than destroy? Can you imagine a world where we let God transform us from the inside out so that our anger doesn't get the best of us, but instead we learn to bravely do the very, very, very difficult work of making peace and reconciliation with those around us, especially those with whom we disagree and don't like? Jesus believes that this world is possible. And he believes you and I can be part of it. And that's why he's called you. That's why you're here. Because Jesus believes that you can partner with God in helping bring about a new kind of world where people use their words and their thoughts and their hearts to bring life and goodness and grace. Isn't that good news? He has chosen you and me. Because he believes in you. So what do you need to do? Do you need to work on how you say things? I do. Do you need to work on how you respond to things emotionally? Maybe you need to turn off the 24-hour news cycle because all it does is fill us all with rage. Wouldn't that be refreshing? I want to challenge you to have a 2-to-1 ratio of time that you listen to this versus time that you listen to the news. I think that would dramatically change what kind of people we're becoming by the voices that we listen to. If the voices that we're listening to are making us more and more angry, and don't get me wrong, there's some things that I think we ought to be angry about, because I think there's some things that God's angry about. But maybe we need to turn off the sound bites and become people who are peacemakers. Do you need to be reconciled to somebody? We all know that it was their fault and not yours. If so, I want to invite you to go. You make the first move. Remember what Jesus says, and I'm going to take him at his word, that nothing that we've done this morning and nothing that we're going to do for the rest of our worship time is as important as you being reconciled to that other person. Nothing. Which means if you need to be reconciled to them, I'm giving you permission to go, to leave. You can get up and leave right now if you need to. Some of you really need to go to the bathroom and now you're just going to hold it. But it matters that much If you need to be reconciled with someone, do the difficult work and you make the first step. It's not easy. It's not fun. It doesn't feel good. And it might not turn out the way that you want. But Jesus is inviting us to be fully human. So get up and go. And may you be filled with the joy and peace of knowing that God is going to continue his work in you and that he's not going to give up on you. May you know in your heart that he's going to bring forward the fullest expression of who you were always meant to be as a human being. May you be brave and bold in pursuing reconciliation. May you be gentle and kind in the way that you speak to others and about others. May you know that your words have the power to create a whole new world. And may you know that God's on your side. He's with you.